Welcome to the Minder Podcast.
Welcome to the first episode of a new podcast dedicated exclusively to the TV programme Minder. I'm your host, Paul Stenning. I grew up watching Minder, and as you are here, you may have done too. But then I'm also sure people discover the show all the time, who weren't maybe even alive when the show was first made. They soon realise it was consistently the best scripted and acted show on television from the late 1970s to the early 1990s. It was also a show that kept a consistent theme of a Minder looking after Arthur Daly, with revolving characters, several of which were regulars. Each show then also featured additional actors who were central to that episode. This dedicated Minder podcast will be highlighting many of these actors, as well as other assorted people associated with the show, with a series of exclusive interviews all about their time on the programme. We start off for episode one with one of my favourite ever Minder characters, George Layton, who played Des. He appears in six episodes, and his performances stand out in each one. His work outside Minder is also very impressive. As an actor, he appeared in Coronation Street, Live of Birds, Doctor Who, The Likely Lads, Z-Cars, The Kenny Everett TV Show, It Ain't Half Hot Mum, and EastEnders. As a writer and creator of shows, he's also written Executive Stress, Don't Wait Up, Robin's Nest, and he wrote for On the Buses, Doctor at Large, Doctor at Sea, etc. Happy days. He's also an author, and we discuss this later on, and he has several books out there, including The Fib and other stories. It's also worth mentioning, George was the voice of Sydney in the Tetley Tea commercials, and he also voiced a Harry Potter commercial. And so, on episode one of the Minder podcast, in association with Minder.org, here is George Layton. Just say that you look incredibly good, considering years since my...
See how old I am. Yeah. Paul, let me tell you, there has been actually an odd sort of disadvantage, because if you're casting a character my age, and I play a lot younger, but if you are, I never get the parts, because I've been... People say, well, like, but, you know, it's an old geezer. You don't look at... You know, I've got a natural energy. You met me, I'm a lot of body movement, talk, and energy, and enthusiasm. And it cuts me out of various parts where, of course, I could act it, but I don't have, I can't hold back my enthusiasm for things. And you try and do it, I'll try and be the part, but people don't have the imagination. Well, you are an actor. You could. I did Fagin when I was bloody 32 or something. I was 35. I was quite an old part to do, but. But it's very nice of you to say so. I've just done my Pilates. I'd like to say I did every day, but I try and force myself to do it when I can. And I really feel the benefits immediately. It's extraordinary.
When did you start doing that?
I started going to classes quite a few years ago. About 6 or 7 years ago. Well, I started actually about 2011 or 12. And then I had to stop because I went to Chichester. I remember I was doing it before I went to Chichester. And then I went back into it, but I do find it really beneficial. I recommend it to anybody. But I've not been, and at the beginning of lockdown, I was really disciplined. But I've been doing that blog actually. I'm doing it more occasionally now because I want to do some other things. But it does take a lot of my time up, and there's no excuse. But it's like when you've got something to do, I can't go and do Pilates now. It's another 40 minutes when I should be working. Do you know what I mean? So I've got to have more discipline,
Well, I was going to ask you this at the end, but I think given we're talking about the blog, I can ask you now so I don't forget as well. But you mentioned, especially with you saying about the age of characters that you may need to play, that you mentioned something in your blog about recent audition and... recent audition that you went for.
Oh, an audition, yes.
And I'm just wondering, because, I guess this would apply to Minder probably more so when it was longer back in time. But in this day and age, when someone is looking to potentially cast you, I'm not being in the acting game at all. I wonder, don't they already know they want you? Do you really need to audition?
Sadly, it's occasionally, it occasionally works out like that. You just get an offer. The director wants you, trusts you, and you get the offer.
Right.
It's bloody rare. It's rare, and there's so little work around. I don't do very much now, Paul, to be honest. Partly my own choice, because, you know, I've cut so much out. I mean, in my earlier days, when we first married, and I had to go to, you know, I got divorced. Everything I'd worked for seemed to go down. That just disappeared. So I had to do jobs that I wouldn't necessarily want to do. Usually it's a job that's going to bring me money and I want to do it. I don't think I've ever done a job thinking, oh God, I'm doing that purely for the money. But I didn't like being away from home. I didn't like being on tour. You know, I like to, you know, if you're happily married, then you want to be with your wife. If you're unhappily married, acting's a great gig. You know, you get away from home. You know, I've often thought pantomime was full of people that just want to get away for Christmas. It seems to me. So I'm a little bit cynical about that, but, you know, I have done my share of being away, of doing tours. I mean, when Moya, my wife Moya, when we got married in 1977, within weeks, I was in Australia for 6 months doing a play. And that really is a play I wanted to do. I mean, I really willed myself to get it. It was a play called Funny Peculiar, which Richard Beckinsale did in the West End.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted to play that part. But it was also a way to get a good paycheck and save madly for 6 months to get a deposit to buy a house, and that worked out. But it was not a very happy time for me because you don't want to get married and leave your wife for 6 months.
Yes.
Harder for her than for me, actually. But there you go. That's a long, long time ago.
Unusual arrangement, for sure.
But
unusual arrangement.
Well, it was needs must. You know, it was a terrific part. It was a really good part. I was getting well paid. Yeah, I willed it to happen. I'm a great believer in positive thinking. And I thought it's the only way I'm going to earn a lot of money quickly. And I was the big star, you know, because it was very linked with Doctor in the House. It was very popular over there.
Mm.
I've been to Australia before. And it's just a way of going over there as the big star, getting a nice paycheck. But actually, I was saving every penny I could. I was living a double life there, not being the big star at all, going on the bus if I could, and you know, things like that. But anyway, wow. A long time ago, things worked out very well. So where do we start on this? I mean, I'd like to direct people towards the blog. In as much as nice to garner more readers for it. And it's got quite a good big following, I think, on Twitter. I don't know if you read one of my blogs. It's, I didn't direct you to too much reading this morning. I thought the last one was quite funny, the getting rid of my car, which is catchy in the back of the bloody thing, if I'm honest. Mm. But it was very self-deprecatory, wasn't it? I mean, it really was. I made myself like a real twat.
Was that true that you caught a glimpse and felt that you suddenly looked older?
No, to be honest, it wasn't. I mean, no, I thought how pathetic I am. Yes, that's all true, but I used to often have a glimpse of myself in a shop window and think, God, I look great. So, and I still think I look, well, you said I look great. I still think I look great. But there is something faintly pathetic about grey hair or gun. If it's sunny, I hate wearing baseball caps, but wearing, you know, I think it's a bit of a, it was a posermobile, no question. So there's a lot of truth in it. But no, I think I look in a mirror, I go, bloody marvellous.
Whatever you take in fares.
In that?
What's wrong with it?
What's right with it? I'm not driving around in that.
Yes. Tell him what a terrific piece of machinery that is. Don't be deceived by appearances, Terry. That engine is tuned to perfection. Perfection.
Cut the crap, Des.
Terry, I can tell you this because I know your sound. But that engine was relied on by a certain little firm to get them off the scene of some very heavy tickles. Lively, you know what I mean?
Oh, so you expect me to drive around in a motor that's been used?
Not the body, you loon. Not the body. He's talking about the engine. The body it came out of has been recycled. What you might call my small contribution to our ailing steel industry.
Look at those tyres, Terry. 100%.
Is it MOT'd?
I'll write one out for you.
What about insurance?
I have a pal who has a nice line in cover notes.
But why can't I have one of them?
Leave off, Terry. They're movable stock. Those I can sell. Terrific.
That doesn't make as good coffee, does it?
Well, you make it sound as if you're quite, you've done very well for yourself in your career. Let's put it that way.
Still full of anxieties and insecurities, like all actors, well, most actors anyway. Hmm. What I was going to say was I'm not a great fan of the social media, even though I use Twitter. And I wrote one of mine, you might have a look at it when you finish. It's called, the anti-social media, Twitter and me. I'm not into Facebook. I'm not, I think there's Zoom. That's not social media. That's great communication. But I'm not into it all. And I talk about Twitter. I compare it to, it's a modern day speakers. Do you remember Speakers Corner at Hyde Park?
Yeah.
I thought it was a modern day speakers. But you've got quirky, funny people there, entertaining people. You've got horrible, nasty people, dangerous people. And I think Twitter's a bit like that. So have a read of that if you want to refer to it. I think it was quite a good analogy that, but it's been very helpful to me. And there's a lovely site, Twitter, and I think I write about this, people send me, there's a lot of love for 70s comedy, some of it undeserved, I think there's a lot of, garbage in the 70s as well. But I was lucky to be involved in various series that are so loved, like Doctor in the House and A&R Fontenot. There's so much love out there, and you get lovely things sent and photos that, and things, people send me, excerpts of shows I've been in and voices I've done. I don't remember them from that. I don't remember doing them sometimes. Or it rings a memory. But so there's a lovely site of Twitter, and that's what I sort of try and use it for, just to alert people to, this little blog I do. And I think a lot of people read it that I didn't even know about. There must be a way of sourcing how many people look at it, but I have no idea. And it's served its purpose for me during lockdown, because are you recording this now? I mean, you can use this if you want to. To be honest, that is true. If you look at it, I did walk away from a very successful writing career because I just couldn't stand it anymore. And if I talk about writing a comedy series now, situation comedy, I start getting tearful. I mean, it really was not good for my health. So I having created this monster, because I'm really an actor, and it was a very nice sideline that slowly became imbalanced. And it was very pressurizing. And I was younger. You have to be fit to be a writer. I believe that. It's not being like being an athlete. I remember I used to think, I've lost it. Maybe I was a bit ill then. I was getting a bit of a cold or something was not working. Do you know what I mean? But you're a writer, so you know what I'm talking about. It's something you really have to work hard and put the hours in. And I always put the hours in. Anyway, I think I'm meandering on, as I promised I wouldn't do. So you want to talk about Minder mostly.
Yes, and I'll just, necessarily remembering everything. I'm wondering, because I had to check, I thought you were in a good 5 episodes, and it's actually 6.
I could have been in many more. Do you know that?
You should have been in many more. Because
I could have been, but I'm too honourable. I've had a very lucky career. I've made luck. I've worked hard at luck. I've grabbed my luck. But sometimes I've made crass decisions. Minder was one of them, as much as I never quite knew when Des was going to be featured. They didn't know. Suddenly they bring my agent. Pencil it in, and then it clashed. Actually, I feel like crying now when I'm talking about it, because it was the most stupid decision. I remember exactly where I was. I was somewhere, I was in the country, and it was days before, phones were called mobiles, I think I had a bleeper maybe for voiceovers, but my agent, my then, and gave me the day. So I said, I committed myself to directing a pantomime. It was Aladdin. No, what was it? It was Dick Whittington, actually. No, Aladdin, that's right. In Bath. This would be about 1984. Is that about right for Minder, 1984?
So it would have been when you left and Ray Winston took over.
And I said to my agent, it was Paul Elliott, the pantomime king. I must have been off my head. I said, I can't really let him. He wouldn't have given a monkey. He'd got another director. I'm directing a pantomime. It's like putting on a musical in 10 days or... it was a nice cast. John Nettles was in it. Who else was in it? Well, Francis Matthews. I was looking forward to doing it. I should have just said, great, I'll get out of the pantomime, because that was much more important. And it's something I regret all the time. I mean, Usually, I don't regret things. I've made wrong decisions and that's it, we've done it. But then I thought, how could I have been so stupid? I could have done many more. You know, all they had to do was put another low-life character in. Ray Winston, good luck to him, but it was such a good part. I did six, and I could have done probably about double it, I should think. Such a shame, wasn't it?
So I always wondered what the reason was, because...
I wasn't available for that one. But having created the new low-life, they weren't going to come back to me, were they? I mean, it was like, I don't mind putting my hands up and saying it was the most bloody stupid thing I could come in. And also, such more enjoyable doing Minder and, you know, being fed and watered and picked up by a car than going down to direct a pantomime in 10 days and all this stress that went with that. That must be off my head. I had a moment of, I was just being honourable, I think. I thought, I'll give you my word. I didn't even sign a contract. I'd give my word and what can I do? It's a shame. And it's amazing, really, how much people remember from Minder. It amazes me how, you know, I'm walking down the street, so it's not so much in lockdown, but, you know, the character made such a mark. You've upset me now, Paul, actually. I feel a bit upset just thinking about it.
Well, at least we've
got... Oh, your fault. It's my fault.
Hold on. It's one of my wheels.
Oh, I wouldn't know a thing about that.
You're going to try and sell me my own wheels?
I don't know what you're talking about. I freely admit I bought them only this morning. But I know you'll believe me, Terry, when I tell you I have no idea where they came from.
He's only trying to sell me my own wheels.
You should have kept your eye on the motor. This is a very rough neighbourhood round here.
You said low life then, which is interesting because there's times where he's quite an underhand character, but I actually consider your character and your mannerisms and your effervescence to be really positive and uplifting whenever you're on the particular episode. Is that you, or is that how you had to play it, or is that more yourself?
It's interesting. I remember when my agent rang me and said, you know, for this series, it's going to be with Dennis Waterman and George Cole. He can't have said Minder, because when I got the script or whatever, or the instructions, or when I even arrived, I think it was in Hammersmith, in an old school where the office was, I actually thought it was called Minder. I thought, that bloody Minder. I couldn't know what it was. I had no idea what it was about. I didn't see the script, I beg your pardon. I was just told to go to this office to see Peter Sasdy, who was the director. Very nice man. So I go along for this thing called Minder. And then I find out what it's about, and he explains it. It's all about, you know, the George Cole character, and Dennis is the Minder, Tony McCann, and this is a character. And like with anything, you bring a lot of your own ideas. I can be a bit of an irritating actor, because I come up with lots of ideas. But out of every 10 I offer up, 9 are rubbish, but there might be one little golden gem. And I think I bring that to every part of play. It irritates some actors. Actually, there was an act, when I did this Sunburn in Cyprus and in Portugal, I was very sort of, you know, improvisational maybe, or how about trying this? And, you know, I remember one actor, I did not get on with him, because he wasn't my kind. I'll turn this off, I'm sorry. My builder, I should talk to him, really. Anyway, so, well, what was I just saying? I was saying, I bring up all these, you know, so, you know, you try things out, and in some ways it can look like maybe scene stealing. It can be just, but you're just trying to be creative. You're just trying to get beyond what's on. And also, it's the kind of thing as a writer. Bloody, I hate it when people interfere with my writing, so I'm a complete hypocrite. But you know, you come up with the odd nice things. It can be very rewarding. So that's the kind of actor I am. So I bring a lot of energy to any role I do, and hopefully still respect any script. I don't mean that, and respect other writers, but you know, just say, can we try this? Can we try that? Do you want to try it? And, one of the things, when I got the script, that I think makes Des stand out a little bit, possibly, I'll defer to your, can I put that on airplane mode so it wouldn't ring? That doesn't do the work anymore. that's right. Anyway, so I read the script, and I could see this was all very, very London-based. Every character was a sort of Cockney character, all London. And I thought, how can I be a little bit different? And I suggested to Peter Sasdy that I play it with my natural northern accent. to make myself different to all these other characters. I think that actually worked very well. I don't know if you agree, but it made me that little, you know, no, Terry, don't do it. You know, so it's a little northern fella that's come down to the smoke.
Yeah.
And he's had to live on his wits, rather. And he is. And also, I'm always specialised in playing amoral characters. I mean, Dr. Collier in Doctor in the House was pretty amoral.
Mm.
Very different to Des, much more middle class. And also a character I played in Robin's Nest, which is I came on as the writer, but they were discussing one of the writing meetings, they were discussing this character called Vernon, who could they cast? And I was thinking, this is dead right for me. It's written by another writer. I managed to wangle that part as well. And that was a very hugely amoral character. And he's playing these amoral characters who, when they're caught out, like Des was, would own up. And Dr. Collier was like that. You know, he said, yeah, you're right. You know, so they were devious, but at least would own up to it. And I think it adds a certain charm to it. And it makes sense of any kind of friendship, because that's their relationship, that's the chemistry. But if he can put a pound or two more, a five or two more in his own pocket than, say, Terry's or anybody else's, he'll do it. And that's, I mean, I'm going back a long way, Paul. It's a long time to remember this. I do have a very good memory. As I say, I remember I thought it was called Minder. I remember how I came up with the idea of making Northern. But I don't. I always know it's on TV because I get messages on Twitter, and when I was going to supermarkets more, and I'm getting back, people say, oh, yeah, I saw you, I was watching you this week, and I think that's what channels are they watching? I never see it. But then I get the odd royalty, which buys me a cup of coffee, or if it's a better royalty, I might get a bun with it. So, so you know, it's still there, isn't it, really? It's still popular. And it's, how long ago? I don't know when we made it. Was it the 80s or 70s?
The first episodes were 1979.
79. So I just finished. Yeah. I was in Oliver at the West End and played Fagin for the first time. So I must have got time off to go filming and do that at the same time.
And I think it was. So I think series 3 was your last one, and that was 1982. If that sounds right.
Yeah, that'd be about right. Then I started doing that bloody stupid pandemic. Oh God!
But they seem to wait possibly to replace your character, because Ray Winston came in 84.
That's about right. I thought it was in 84 when I did this Panto, because I directed a Panto in 83. I don't know why I directed this bloody Panto. In those days, I would do everything, because I loved working, and I loved trying to expand my own range. And so, you know, from an actor, I started writing, and I liked directing. So, you know, I directed a pantomime at the Shaw Theatre in London, which was down the road from me. So that was great fun to do, that one. And it was bloody good, if I say so myself. And I had Anita Dobson in it. I had Tim Brooke Taylor, was a neighbour of mine, I persuaded him to play Dave. He was marvellous. He was absolutely marvellous. So, you know, I do enjoy seeing Anita Dobson play my dick, which was nice. It was in Whittington. And then I did Aladdin the following year. So that would be 84. I did Aladdin. So I would have been in that 84 one. It upsets me. I cannot tell you how much it upsets me, because it was a really bad decision. Nothing I can do about it now, but it was not good. It was not a good decision to make, because... Yeah, there we are. Those things happen.
Well, back when
about that time, then, of course, I started writing "Don't Wait Up," which is a big part of my life. Do you remember "Don't Wait Up"? Nigel Hayes and Tony Britton.
Not so that's, well, but
well, I wrote six series of it, so really the acting did take a bit of a sort of backseat as I concentrated on creating 39 episodes, and each one was like a little play. So there we are.
Well, going back to when you first got the script, and then obviously you went and met them. Had you met George or Dennis before?
Well, I knew Dennis. I knew Dennis very well, because we lived near each other when I was in my former life, and I was married early on in my life, and I lived around the corner from Dennis. And we used to play football. We used to see him. There was a pub nearby in St. Margaret's called the Turk's Head. As you know, Dennis does like a pub occasionally. And we'd be there, we were friends. Oh, and of course, I'd been in the Sweeney. So was that pre-Minder?
Yes.
So I'd been in the Sweeney for a couple of episodes with Patrick Moore playing these Aussies. And that actually is very fondly remembered, you know. I mean, I get tweets and emails or fan mail about that all the time still. And we were actually all set, Patrick and I, to do a third episode, which I had for lunch. So, yes, yeah, lovely. And then John, and I think Dennis, certainly John Thorpe said, you know, whose series is this? He's obviously ours. That was shelved. But then, yeah, then, no, they took us out for lunch, Patrick and myself, to say, we're thinking of making a series around you two guys. That's, you know, I might be an idiot turning down Minor, but I wasn't an idiot. I said, yeah, fine, lovely. Never heard another word about it. Mm. It's a shame. These things happen. You get lovely. I don't like lunches, actually, funnily enough. I don't like working. I like going to lunch, but not to a meeting. I've never enjoyed that. I'd rather have a meeting and then go. So the Swedes, so I knew Dennis very well. Sort of just similar age groups, similar, you know, Richard O'Sullivan, Robin Asquith, myself, and all in the group, rivaling each other, but also huge friends and a lot of affection. And as I say, I sent you an email. I tend to see Dennis every year. We have a sort of get-together dinner in a nice Spanish restaurant, that's sadly on the pan at the moment. Not doing that. And that will be doing it this year.
So you really stay friends.
And George, sorry, going back to what you say, I knew of George Cole. I adored him. And I used to listen to him when I was a kid at school in a radio program called The Life of Bliss. It was one of my favourites.
I was just giving Psyche her supper. I've got news for you. Penny's back.
Honestly?
She's on her way round.
Oh, gosh, that's wonderful.
But you're not supposed to know about it. Still. Forewarned is forearmed.
How do you mean?
Well, it's obvious, surely. Penny will want to hear all about your time abroad. What you did.
If you did it alone.
And that raises a vital question. To tell or not to tell?
Oh, about honour, you mean?
Yes.
Well, I shall tell her.
Do you think that's wise?
I think it's mad. Oh, now, look, I admit you were right about honour, but I'm sure Penny will understand.
Oh, my poor old lad. The world's full of broken romances, and as often as not, that could serve as an epitaph.
What?
He was sure she'd understand.
But I wouldn't dream of deceiving her.
But, my dear chap, you wouldn't be deceiving her. Your friendship with Anna was perfectly innocent. Some things are better left unsaid, that's all.
Especially where women are concerned. They're a law unto themselves.
Everything you say is taken in and twisted into evidence against you.
Penny doesn't twist my words.
She doesn't need to. You do it for her.
All right, I'm convinced.
Meaning what? That you won't tell her?
Well, nothing to tell.
That's the spirit. Oh, yes, a word of warning.
Oh, gosh, now what?
You've been away from each other for quite a time. She's bound to ask a few leading questions.
Penny trusts me implicitly.
She'll still ask.
They always do.
Instinctively, it's a sort of routine check.
Yeah, rather like going through the customs. Why, I suppose she'll ask me if I've got anything to declare.
Not directly.
No, and she's not likely to search my luggage either.
Not till you're married.
but you'll get the same searching look.
And a lot of searching questions.
Disguised as light-hearted badinage. You know how it goes.
No.
I was afraid of
that. You played this rather diffident, shy David Bliss. And I'm very proud to say that actually George and I became friends because he was a very private man, you know, very shy. But he did come to my home for dinner, and I went to his home for dinner. And his lovely wife, Penny, I think he lost her this year. Mm-hmm. We became friendly, and I actually, one of the most enjoyable jobs, if I could just go, it was to do with Minor, so I'm not going off the subject, but I was, I was approached about writing a script using Arthur Daly and Dennis to launch a new Renault in Geneva. I was writing the script. So I said, yeah, good. I did a lot of hard work in those days, you know. And then what happened was I got this message saying, look, Dennis has dropped out, so you can't do it. Do you want to do Des? So fantastic. So I started writing this script. So instead of Dennis, it's Des, and I wrote a reason why. I tell you, it's dating. It was when the lights were put up at Hyde Park. It was causing chaos, and I used the fact that Dennis had got held up at Hyde Park, something like that. It was a very funny script, did me a lot of good with George. I have to tell you, Dennis is younger than I am.
Yeah, he's 71, isn't he? Or, no, sorry, 73, sorry.
Listen, they're all young. Everybody's younger than I am. Richard O'Sullivan's younger than I am. Robin Asquith's younger than I am. I'm the old man of the party. I just look better.
Well, you actually do, because even in the original episodes, you look younger than they did.
I've always looked younger than I. My brother's the same. My brother's, he's still working. He's a glass blower. I should check him out. He's fantastic. Anyway, just stop me if I'm jabbering on. If you want to just ask questions, but I can talk for bloody England because I love talking about things I remember. I'll tell you about this bloody sketch I wrote. So it was to launch the Renault, 22, I think it was, or 19. But the problem they had was it was all done in different in Geneva Airport for the British lot, the German lot, the all these different car dealers. But as a writer, they said, "But you haven't got the car. There's no car." So I did it brilliantly. I can't bore you with it now, but it was bloody very, very funny. And I know George loved doing it. We spent a few days in Geneva, and he did his spiel. He was brilliant, actually. And I wrote it overnight. I literally through one night. Wrote myself in. Oh, yeah, and I was saying, Des comes on saying, "Oh, Terry's got stuck in those lights at Hyde Park," or something stupid like that. And we did the whole thing with photos. It was bloody, he was brilliant. Actually, he was brilliant, and he was very complimentary about the script. I thought it might lead to other things, but never did. But, it's always like that. You get the euphoria of a job well done. But it was great to spend time with him, and he had some great Arthur Daly one-liners in it. Something like, what did I say? He's saying, you know, wearing, yeah, he brought out all these watches on a suitcase thing, saying, "Do you want to buy a present for your loved ones or even your wife?" Something like that. It was that kind of dialogue. I was on form that night when I wrote it. Anyway, that's besides that was George, and he was a lovely man. I really loved George. I enjoyed his company. He had a very quiet wit, and, you know, never shy. Or if it was just, you know, if he didn't, you know, he kept himself to himself unless he didn't want to. And for me, it was rather nice that we did become quite friendly. Anyway, there you go.
Well, it's interesting. You mentioned before about you playing amoral characters.
Yes, I do.
Everyone I've ever spoken to about George Cole has said what a lovely man he was, and there's nothing but good things. So how do you reconcile that with, I mean, how do you even get cast as an amoral character when everyone thinks you're super wonderful, and yet he can play the amoral character, as could you?
Well, it's called acting, isn't it? Because you're a nice guy, me, God, bloody play a murderer if you have to. That's what you were saying about auditioning for stuff and all that. You know, people don't have the imagination often. That's the trouble. And I think, to sound a little bit bitter, you think after 60 years as an actor, they could actually twig that, well, if he's lasted this long, surely he could do this part, or he's got to have the imagination to, you know, it doesn't work like that. They want to, even when he, you know, all this, you know, we read about it, typically was self-taping, all this way of auditioning. You have to tape yourself to get the bloody audition. And this is before the pandemic. Clearly, during the pandemic, it's been very useful to be able to do that. But it's been around a while. You do a self-tape in order to get a bloody audition, you know. So they weed out all the self-taping, and then you go and have an interview. I find irritating, not demeaning, to think, well, you know, look at my CV. Just look at the CV. You can see I've had a varied career. And I am actually more versatile. I'm a very versatile actor. I can do, you know, but obviously, my strength has always been in comedy, and I bring a truth to it. And what I've noticed in old things, so I'm being headed to about myself, but I can see now, looking back, I was better than I thought I was. There's a terrific energy in my, whether it was Robbie's Nest I watched the other night, somebody put on Twitter, or I watched an old Doctor series. It's fantastic energy, which I was never aware, it was just natural to me. Do you know what I mean? So, I'm going to run in circles on that question. Yes, you get cast. I mean, clearly there are certain types that you know. I think playing Dr. Paul Collier, and that actually a moral thing developed over the first few series, because the first few episodes, there was very little there in the beginning. Very little there. Just one of the gang, but I didn't know much about it. But then you show strengths that the writers pick up on. And with Paul Collier, which became a terrific part for me, and actually I became one of the writers as well, so I used it, but the writers tweaked to this aspect of this amorality, but rather like Des putting his hands up, you know, when he was called out, not trying to sort of wheel his way out of it. Maybe Des did a bit more of that, but Paul Collier would say, yeah, absolutely. He would sell his own grandmother and then admit it. So that was his charm.
£22, £23, £24, £25.
£25? It's worth more than that for scrap.
Terry, it is scrap. You're lucky to have a mate like me to take it off your hands.
But we bought it off you in the first place.
Yeah, but it's been used as a minicab since then and been in a pile-up. You ought to be paying me to take it away.
Yeah, well, thanks a bunch, pal.
For a friend, any time.
I think it was to bring a little bit of charm to it. And of course, Arthur Daly, for all his sort of nefarious ways, was a charming character, wasn't he? He had a certain odd London wide boy charm that's carried him through. Very similar, really, isn't it, to what I'm talking about? I mean, he endeared himself to people. I've not seen Minder for ages. I don't watch my own stuff, really.
But putting those two things together, then, is it that as a good actor you can play these amoral characters, but when you are genuinely nice, good person, there's always that likability behind it? Would you say that?
As a person or as an actor?
Both, really. The likability.
No, I think you painted me a bit saintly. I've got a bit of a nasty side to me. As I got older, I've got a bit nicer, but because I'm not as ambitious. But, you know, as a writer, I didn't make myself popular. As an actor, you know, I was trying to get, you know, do the best things I could, the best way I could. But as the nicest side of me, actually, was always when I was directing, particularly in the theatre. The responsibility of looking after everybody, of having control of a whole production. Actually, I was talking about this the other day to somebody, saying it did bring a rather nicer side of me out, because I had to have all the worries of putting on a show, let's say a pantomime or a play, and then look after the actors, and being an actor, I knew they had insecurities. So I think the nicest side of me is when I'm directing. As a writer, I'm pretty dig my heels in if I'm not happy with the way it's being done. Well, very much so. I do, because I put a lot of myself into a show. You know, I never handed a script unless I was happy with it. And as an actor, you know, you try and be inventive and, you know, be good. And that brings out a certain sort of steeliness sometimes. So in answer to the question, I don't think I'm quite as nice as... No, I don't think I've got many enemies, put it that way. So I always enjoy my work. I think that brings out as well. This enthusiasm, you know, is always... I've never been sort of cynical about the business and sardonic, you know. In fact, I remember being in someone else filming in Cyprus, and I was one of the older members of the company then, and this, you know, the young actress was counting down the days home. And I said, for God's sake, I said, you know, you could be bloody working on an assembly line, you could be working on a signal line. You know, you're here in the sun, lying on the beach, being waited to be called, and you're moaning about it. I used to sort of think myself being unpopular there, but I think I'm lucky, Paul, that I've always enjoyed working. I love it, actually. And there's very few jobs, or very few people, if they were in a cast, I think I couldn't work with that person again. Now, I think I'll probably count it on three fingers, actually, probably. And I do find actors of both genders can be irritating, but generally, I like a good working atmosphere. I mean, I don't like working with directors who kind of sort of work on a sense of fear. I was talking about that the other day. I wouldn't name him. There's a director no longer with us, but his name came up, and I said, God, I've worked in a TV show. I mean, I just hated going to work every day. See, I thought there was going to be a volcano going to blow up, you know. That doesn't work for me. I work in an atmosphere of, you know, generosity and encouragement.
Well, can I just...
Generally, I've been really lucky. I've always enjoyed whatever jobs I've done.
I'm just thinking of some of the people that were in the episodes you were in who were... like the big name guests in the episodes. If I just read a
few. You know more than I do. Well, you know more than I do. Just
read a few out and you tell me if you remember working.
Well, I'll tell you, before you do this, I still was sent on Twitter, and it was me. And the record, you know, a lot of people didn't know who these other actors were. It was Royston Tickner was an actor who was in it. I recognised him even from behind. And Pete Postlethwaite. Well, I don't remember working with Pete Postlethwaite.
He was one.
I have no recall of it. I actually wrote a film that Pete Postlethwaite nearly did. We were very close. He said, this must be done, and he was going to play the lead role. And it didn't happen. I can't remember why. One of those things that goes away. It's a really good film, actually. I say so myself. And he'd have been brilliant. I thought, often you're in an episode, which he might be in, but I've never seen him, because we haven't been in the same scene, or we haven't been there on the same day.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a still of me in a scene, with George Royston Tickner, I think it was, and people. And I thought, how pathetic. I can't even remember working with him. I think it's sad, actually. So, you name a few more.
Is that just because you've done so many things and that they were quite quick in terms of...
Well, maybe Pete Postlethwaite wasn't that well known then. I don't know. But I don't know. I got a bit of a shock when I saw this still. I thought, God, how could I have forgotten that?
Well, how
very
about,
young-looking me, and a young-looking Pete, actually.
How about Anne Lynn, Glyn Houston, Angela Brown, Derek Jacobi?
Well, Derek Jacobi, I think, was in the very first episode, wasn't he? Was that the very first episode?
One of the
first. The first one we filmed.
First with you, I think. Was it the first
one? Made a con man, didn't he?
Yes.
He pretended he had no money and he was living in a I think it was the first episode we filmed. And that was the episode I read and thought, hang on, it's all set around, goodness, where was Scrubs or where it was, I don't know where we were. And I thought, oh, I'll play him more than that, would be really good, that'll make him just that a bit different. So that worked well. Yeah, I do remember Jacobi in it, and I've worked with Jacobi since, actually. But I think I'd forgotten that. And Anne Lynn, yes, I vaguely remember that. I think there's others of us. Who's that actor Bill Maynard, I think. Was he in one or was it I? I get mixed up between Sweeney and Minder, but I think Bill Maynard was in one.
He is, but not. I don't think you were in that episode. But
I remember sitting in a cafe with him, chatting. I don't know.
How about Mike Reed, Julian Holloway? Mike Reed.
Well, Julian Holloway's an old friend of mine. Yes, I'd forgotten that Julian was in it. Yes, yeah. But Julian's a friend of mine as well, yes. I haven't seen everyone. Well, yeah, go on. Give me a few more. I like this. But I think these are people I had scenes with or just happened to be in my episode.
They were in the episode, and there was...
It doesn't mean to say we saw each other, to be honest, because you can be in an episode and just never see them because they all call on different days and different scenes.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe Christopher Biggins might not have been in your scene. Did you work with...
Definitely not, but Chris and I go back a long way. He's actually my younger son's godfather.
Oh, right.
Yes. We go back a long way, Chris and I. Oh, God, back to the 70s.
Well, it's funny because you mentioned Patrick Moore before, and probably most actors of that era at one stage probably did appear in Minder. A lot of the best British actors had at least one episode that they were in. So there seemed to be a lot of connections with the show for some reason.
What a wonderful show to give so much work to people. And, of course, it was a 10-day shoot, so it's probably 10 working days, so it's not talking about Sundays, not even Saturday. Anyway, Monday to Friday, probably, over 2 weeks. It's like doing a major movie every time. I thought the directors, what was wonderful about Minders, that's what we're here to talk about, were the crew. They were fantastic. It was like a real family. I'm sure Dennis, or anybody you talk to, would be the same. It was, and that way you work quickly. Certainly, I don't think if you went over, don't we ever went into overtime, but there's never, 6 o'clock, we're going to pick up 7 o'clock. You know, it was a fantastic working atmosphere. It was fantastic. And of course, as actors, we get many hours to lie around and, after lunch I was always falling asleep. I never drank. When I was working, but, having a nice meal and, hot day, I think I won the Wimbledon. I'm thinking of Sweeney again. Sorry. Anyway, it wasn't a Wimbledon, Roehampton. But anyway, it was the actors, a bit like footballers, they can have a little rest on the field, they're like tennis players who are there all the bloody time, to, singles players. Well, actors are like that. We have time to recoup a little bit, and then you've got an excuse not to turn it on and get your lines right. But the crew were there all bloody day long, from morning till night, and roughing up. They were amazing. I could see them now. The camera was a lovely man, and I always used to sort of say, they go like this or like this. He'd tell me closer, he got this. I used to love working close to the crew, and I'm a great admirer of these technicians, brilliant technicians, actually, brilliant. Nice sound man, everybody, fantastic.
You're making a wonderful investment here, Mr. King. You see, under government law, the government insists you have to buy the car in order to get the number. So you're not just getting your own personalised number plate with your own exact initials, you're also getting a wonderful little runabout for the wife as well. Not bad for 250 quid.
Not bad at all, Des. 125 each, eh?
Have you met my partner?
So there you have it. My immense thanks to George for all the time he spent with me, particularly as it was supposed to be just a 30-minute interview. Thanks also to Simon Sharkey, his agent, for arranging the interview. I truly hope you enjoyed the first episode. There will be more coming up from George Layton in episode 2, which will be available in 2 weeks' time. You can also visit George's website at georgelayton.co.uk or follow him on Twitter at @TheGeorgeLayton. In the meantime, feel free to suggest future guests or anything else you like by emailing winchesterclub@minderpodcast.co.uk. That's winchesterclub@minderpodcast.co.uk. You can also head over to minder.org, a website run by friend of the show, Jonathan. It's the most fabulous website ever created, literally a Minder fan's dream. Jonathan, or J&O on the site, will be mentioning the show from time to time on the forum there as well. Thanks for listening.